With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
U.S. cattle supplies and packing capacity tightening again as Tyson Foods announced it will close its Lexington, Nebraska beef plant and scale its Amarillo, Texas facility to one full capacity shift. The decision, delivered just after 3 p.m. on Friday, immediately raises concerns for cattle producers, feed yards, and rural communities that rely on the plants for market access and jobs. Now, industry analysts say the move reflects both shrinking cattle numbers and the company's need to cut costs after posting weaker beef earnings in fiscal 2025. Those Tyson Q4 financials showed company-wide sales up modestly, but beef profitability still under heavy pressure. Adjusted operating income rose across most divisions. Yet, the beef segment projected to post a $400 to $600 million loss in fiscal 2026. That as the national cattle herd remains at a 70-year low. So the restructuring shifts volumes to other Tyson plants, but reduces total U.S. packing capacity at a time when producers already face fewer competitive bids. Now, the announcement drew immediate political reaction. Nebraska Senator Deb Fischer, longtime advocate for strengthening cattle market competition, warned that the closure will strain rural economies and reinforce the need for broader reforms to ensure that producers have fair access to markets. U.S. feed yards are operating with fewer cattle this fall. Latest USDA cattle on feed report released on Friday afternoon showing inventories down 2% from last year and with one major shift. Nebraska now leads the nation in cattle on feed, surpassing both Texas and Kansas. Total U.S. on-feed numbers for November 1st reached 11.7 million head. It marks tighter supplies heading into winter. Placements fell sharply in October, down 10%, the lowest for the month since that series began back in 1996. Weights skewing lighter with more than 500,000 calves placed at 600 pounds or less, as drought, high feed cost, and limited forage continue to shape marketing decisions. Marketing's also lower, down 8% from a year ago. Now, Nebraska posting 2.64 million head on feed, edging Texas at 2.63 million and Kansas at 2.46 million. Nebraska also led in marketing's and continues to benefit from concentrated feed yard capacity, strong processor access, and a robust corn supply. Well, U.S. food manufacturers will rely heavily on Canadian oats again this year. Still, rising rail tariffs and tighter supplies reshaping how those oats move into key milling regions. Since domestic output cannot meet demand for cereals, oatmeal, and granola, buyers remain dependent on consistent cross-border shipments, and transportation costs are increasingly driving the equation. Now, looking ahead, oat shipments will peak after harvest, but elevated freight rates and tighter supplies may suppress volumes into early 2026. It's Agriculture Today.
The 2025 Amarillo Farm and Ranch Show is coming December 2nd through 4th at the Amarillo Civic Center. See nearly 500 exhibitors featuring the latest tractors, technology, and equipment. Attend CEU sessions with agriculture experts, network with fellow producers, and find great deals on seeds, feed, and fencing. Don't miss it. Mark your calendars for the 2025 Amarillo Farm and Ranch Show, December 2nd through 4th at the Amarillo Civic Center.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This is Agriculture Today.
Certainly the formula has been released. It's just something that everybody is still trying to really dive into.
Cody Besant, CEO, Plains Cotton Growers, on disaster assistance.
The other thing that's very definitive as well is, depending on how the operator was set up, there's a one-time decision that folks may have made up front, but now it's a little bit obtuse because of the 25 crop year. In the enactment of the One Big Beautiful Bill with the new farm bill that we're underneath, is regardless if you enrolled in TLC or ARC, then you will get the higher of for the 25 crop year. So lenders can then utilize that too in an end of the year scenario or a refinancing scenario going into the new calendar year. In addition to, and this is something that the ag industry and the cotton industry very specifically was keen on. So those that had originally taken stacks, typically and will be in the future forecoming of 2026, deemed still ineligible to participate in TLC. But for this year alone, growers were still able to go in. If they wanted to detach their stacks policy, they still had to pay a portion of their premium, but they could enroll in TLC ARC and get the higher of as well. And many did that within the cotton belt. So that's something that growers can really lean into, that lending institutions can lean into. As folks start looking at end-of-the-year expenses, refinancing, going into the new year and things of that. So there's still a lot to be looked into that can be utilized. Still a lot of unknowns, unfortunately, at this point, but not in a negative connotation. There are things on the horizon. It just hasn't had time to really materialize and be built out, simply because the government shutdown really did delay a lot of this information from being really looked at, really vetted in a timely manner. But we can expedite it as best we can, working with USDA and members of Congress, where both growers and their lending institutions can utilize it. It is just going to take a little bit of time. Granted, you know, kind of keep this into perspective, they've only been opened back up for the better part of about 3 days now. And so it's kind of like a big ship. Once it heads in a direction, you got to turn it back around. It just takes a minute. And so I just ask folks to be patient and be kind and courteous to those that are heavily involved, like their county offices or others, as we navigate the ship back along the main course to provide some much needed substantive assistance.
Now, on the input side, Josh Linville with StoneX looks at fertilizer and India.
I will tell you, personally speaking, I thought that we would see India come back with this tender. Like you said, we've been talking about this for a couple of weeks now. But we thought it was only going to be about 1.5 million ton, which I thought was a very attainable number. We thought, hey, there's no surprise when they had the shipment window midway through January, 1.5 million would be no problem. They surprised us. 2.5 million is a very, very big number. Yeah. My worry with this tender is that large of a number, you have a much higher likelihood you're going to quote unquote fail. It's going to be very hard to get that many tons all in one fell swoop, especially if somebody comes in rather aggressive, like we saw in the last tender, on their price ideas. Anytime we see them fall short of their purchase tender goal, the market likes to use that as a impetus to push the price higher. It's a bullish point. So we'll see how it goes. We got China, who's exporting more tons. Maybe they can participate more. Maybe they do double it and they can take care of half of the tons that India is looking for, and the rest of the world can cover that other half. But we'll find out. Offers are due this Thursday, and then we'll find out very quickly on the pricing information. Hopefully we'll find out tons and things like that. And I'm not quite sure if by the time you and I talk next week, we will have the firm story, but I think we'll be a lot closer to it.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
So they do seem to be trying to appease the United States, but there's still some significant questions about whether we will get the fully committed amount. We don't even have a trade deal.
That's Arlen Suderman with StoneX.
President Trump and President Xi met in South Korea at the end of October. They had a handshake agreement. What the White House announced at that point was the 12 million metric tons of soybeans by the end of the year, 25 million metric tons in each calendar year thereafter for the next 3 years. China has never acknowledged that. The White House said there would be other commodities included in the deal as well, but they were working out the details. Those details would be finished and we'd have a signed agreement the next week. And here we are several weeks later and still have no agreement. Now, USDA Secretary Rollins said this morning that we should have that deal inked either this week or next. That sounds like what we were told at the end of October. And that we should have more announcements of commodity purchases. We don't have that. Nonetheless, China is making some purchases. But there are some risks going forward. First of all, I don't know if you've noticed, but the tensions with Japan, between Japan and China, have dramatically escalated. Japan elected a new prime minister who took office in October, and she shocked the world leaders when she announced recently that she was going to stand by Taiwan with military assistance if necessary. Now, of course, that triggered an anger response from China, which, quote unquote, discouraged its citizens from traveling to Japan, and that's resulted in a sharp reduction in passenger travel to Japan. They also took other steps to reduce trade with Japan as well, and they've been ramping up military activity significantly in the region, particularly between China and the Korean Peninsula, as kind of a show of force against Japan. Now, Japan has refused to back down, and the U.S. ambassador to Japan has publicly expressed full support for Japan, which pulls the United States into it. Furthermore, the U.S. Senate sent a bill to President Trump's desk relaxing restrictions on official engagements with Taiwan that had been in place for 40 years, originally meant to appease China. So the Chinese are now watching very closely to see if President Trump signs that bill or not. That would allow U.S. dignitaries to make regular trips to Taiwan. All of this could blow up the commodity trade deal in process currently with U.S. negotiators, because China is extremely angry if anyone stands up in support of Taiwan independence. Now, President Trump and President Xi of China had that deal at the end of October. As I said, we still don't have a signed agreement, so it could all still fall apart. Now, if we look at another factor that could cause it to fall apart as well, and that's what I've been saying all along, is the key to any trade deal with China, and that's over rare earth minerals and magnets. That continues to be a sticking point as China continues to find ways for withholding critical rare earths needed not only for manufacturing, but also for our national defense. Europe is fighting the same battle with China now, and China, of course, holds a near monopoly on the supply of rare earth minerals. It's one of the reasons China's been investing in Africa, which holds an estimated 30% of the reserves of these critical minerals. China's been offering zero tariffs to nearly every African country to strengthen its ties with these nations in an effort to build infrastructure within these nations necessary to mine and process these minerals locally, giving it again the capacity to control who receives them.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
You hear that? That's the sound of forever. Because there's nowhere else you'd rather spend forever than on land like this. Tending a herd, growing crops, raising a family. At Capital Farm Credit, we thrive at helping the next generation of farmers and ranchers like yourself by providing advice, products, and opportunities to help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We all know Tyson's one of our big four meat packers.
Dr. David Anderson, Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Livestock Marketing Economist.
This plant in Nebraska is a big plant. It has a capacity of, I think, 5,000 head a day. That's a big beef plant. But, you know, it really, in the bigger picture, you know, we've got the fewest number of beef cows in the U.S. since 1961. We have fewer calves. We got fewer cattle on feed. And I think this is a fear a lot of people had that at some point, you know, some part of our packing capacity would be at risk of closure just simply because there's not enough animals. And so I think we're all hoping that something like this would not happen, but that it has, I don't think should be a big surprise.
In 2013, Cargill closed a plant similar size, Plainview, Texas. Are there similarities?
They closed that plant in 2013 really as a result of the drought that we had in 11 and 12 that reduced the Texas herd by over a million beef cows. And also Oklahoma declined in numbers as well. And so it was just plain lack of cattle that forced that closure. And so this is the next big plant really to go. And we know, I mean, we know all of our beef packers are certainly losing money, and we don't have a lot of hard evidence of expanded, an expanding cow herd or heifer retention that would lead to more cattle in the next several years. So that, you know, expansion is several years out in terms of expanding beef production and cattle numbers. And so with losing money and that, I guess this is, has been the calculation they made. And again, That some kind of plant would close is probably not a big surprise.
So could this be setting us up now for an expansion of the beef herd?
You would think the high prices we see for cattle today, calves today, would cause some expansion. Yet, you know, I think there's some reasons for a slow expansion. And one of the things we have going on, if you look at the drought monitor, we have some dry conditions. You know, we continue to have urban sprawl, things like that, that's taking more ranch land out. I think you got to wonder about how much expansion we can do here in cow numbers versus other places. It's also interesting that you make that note because this afternoon USDA's cattle on feed report came out. And I think if I remember right from looking at it, glancing at it, Nebraska now has more cattle on feed than Texas does. And that's been headed that direction for a while, particularly with the closure of the border with Mexico to import feeder cattle from Mexico. That's particularly had a hard hit on numbers in Texas and the Southwest feedlots. And I think it's finally caught up to where there's now a few more on feed in Nebraska than here.
But the southern border remains closed to Mexican feeder cattle imports.
I think we have to assume that, you know, reducing those number of feeder cattle from Mexico is down to zero for now. The last year, you know, the border closed, I think, on November 22nd of last year, so it's been a year. That's probably led to some higher calf prices simply by cutting supplies, but it's also led to a lot of pressure on the cattle feeding side because that's, you know, that's a lot of animals that would have been fed here. And the value-added agriculture value of that, the numbers going through packing plants. But certainly, you know, you would think at some point we get this under control and we resume imports. I have no idea when that might be, but at some point you would expect that, which could add some numbers in Texas and the Southwest. And at times those cattle have been fed in Oklahoma and Colorado as well.
It's Agriculture Today.
Attention farmers, Jim and Jody Johnson are retiring and their premium equipment is heading to Purple Wave's December 30th Ag Auction. Don't miss their 2024 John Deere ExactEmerge 1775 NT Planter and 2019 John Deere S760 Combine. This retirement auction features well-maintained machinery that's been part of a successful farming operation with equipment located in Osage, Iowa. Everything sells. Absolute no reserve to the highest bidder. Visit purplewave.com for details. Purple Wave Auction, straight, simple, sold.
The 2025 Amarillo Farm and Ranch Show is coming December 2nd through 4th at the Amarillo Civic Center. See nearly 500 exhibitors featuring the latest tractors, technology, and equipment. Attend CEU sessions with agriculture experts, network with fellow producers, and find great deals on seeds, feed, and fencing. Don't miss it. Mark your calendars for the 2025 Amarillo Farm and Ranch Show, December 2nd through 4th at the Amarillo Civic Center.
This is Agriculture Today.
We did tighten the ending stocks up a little bit, but look, the trade was expecting it to be a bit more tighter. So because it missed the trade expectation, it was basically a bearish report.
Guy Allen is the director of the IGP Institute on international wheat stocks.
Looking at the world wheat production number, 25-26 production, world production was pegged at just under 829 million metric tons. That's up actually 12.7 million tons from September and up 3.5% from a year ago. And as I sort of run through these countries, they're all slightly bigger number. The Australia crop increased 1.5 million tons to 36 million metric tons compared to 34.1 a year ago. Argentina was up 2.5 million tons from 2 months ago to 22. It was 18.5 last year. Russia production was up 86.5 million metric tons, up 1.5 million. Exports, though, were actually lowered for Russia, 1 million tons to 44. Ukraine production left unchanged. European production increased 2.2 million tons to 142.3. Canadian production was up 1 million tons at 37 versus just under 36 in September. China was steady at 140 million metric tons, and imports were left unchanged on that. So just bigger general production numbers around the world is really what's hanging on this wheat market. And all those numbers were above what the trade expectations were.
Also looks at the dollar and transportation cost.
The U.S. dollar, since 2 months ago, we've seen the U.S. dollar index rally from about 97.5 up to just above 100 on the index. When the currency shows a bit of strength like that, that does weigh on U.S. commodity prices and its competitiveness around the world. Switching over to transportation, just on domestic transportation, we have seen barge freight break a bit, which sort of indicates harvest is pretty much over through the Corn Belt, particularly across the river states. We do continue to see a record corn export program, which is keeping it firm, but it has come down off those harvest highs. And that tells me most of this crop is now put away. And with the carries on the boards, probably sitting in pretty tight hands in the country elevators. Similarly, rail freight has broke as well on the UP rail lines. Rail cars are bid option price with maybe a 200 offer. And the BN, still a bit of a premium there, but it's below 1,000. It's bid about 500, offered about 600 per car. So rail freight's coming down. Internationally, on the dry bulk, we've seen dry bulk index come up to an 18-month high. A lot of that, I think, is being driven not so much by grains, but we're seeing China buy a bit more iron ore and coal. Coal and iron ore account for about 2/3 of the volume in that dry bulk index, which grain has to compete with that in order to get transportation. So that's what we're seeing from a logistical side of things.
And what about China?
Well, just on China particularly, it was good to see them come to a more friendly arrangement there. They're still waiting for some of the details. We have seen China buy some soybeans, but not as much as maybe we were hoping. Wheat purchases have been
anemic,
and the corn purchase has been disappointing there as well. We have seen a little bit of corn shipments and a little bit of sorghum there as well. So hopefully we'll work through that. So we'll see. I think the market wants to see the actual sales, but also they want to see the grain actually be shipped. So we'll see how that comes about.
It's Agriculture Today.
When it comes to ag chemical application, make sure your equipment delivers. For years, growers and custom commercial applicators alike have depended on Wiley sprayers and Case IH application equipment from Wiley Implement and Spray Center. Wiley offers new and used self-propelled sprayers, as well as our own line of pull-type sprayers for any size operation. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
So we have seen a decline from China buying soybeans for years.
Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins on Squawk Box on CNBC Monday morning.
It is an important point, though, because China just a few years ago was buying about 65% of our soybeans from America. They have pivoted to buying a lot of Brazilian soybeans. And also the president has said, as has Secretary Bessent, that using our soybean farmers for leverage is not okay. So in the last just a couple of weeks ago, the announcement was that China is back on to buy soybeans, 12 million metric tons this year, 25 million metric tons over the next few years. They've already put in a purchase order. We've already started shipping soybeans their way, almost 1.5 million metric tons. We have every indication they will continue to buy soybeans, sorghum, et cetera. But it goes to the larger effort of President Trump. We can't be so reliant as Americans producing American products on one country, a foreign adversary. So opening up, Japan's going to buy more soybeans. The EU is going to buy more soybeans. There are countries all around the world now that have committed to that, Argentina and others. So next year, I think you're beginning to see a incredible move toward these opening markets and moving more of our American agriculture products out. Soybeans are at their highest number. They've been in about 15 months. Other parts of our row crops are not seeing that as much, but we're working on that too. But just solving for relying on just one country to buy more than a majority, we just can't do that anymore.
But it looks like China is slow rolling this agreement.
We're actually about 1.5 million metric tons, but your point is still salient, right? That 1.5 million of 12 million, we've got a significant way to go. I know they are inking the deal this week or next week. Again, every sign is their commitment remains true that they will indeed buy or purchase 12 million metric tons or put the order in. It doesn't mean we'll move 12 million metric tons by the end of December, but it means that those orders will come in according to their commitment and their promise to our president and to Secretary Bessent and to Ambassador Greer. So again, we have every indication that those will continue to move. Even if the purchase order comes in before the end of December, those will move early next year.
But what about the cost of goods?
The structure of what's happening is incredibly positive. We're inflation, the latest numbers were down to 2.9%, to your point, after having been at a high of 9%, average of 5% in Joe Biden, we're already down to 2.9%.
That was about where it was when Biden left, though.
Well, that's right, but it's continuing to come down. We've seen food prices come down. The average Thanksgiving meal is down about 5%. Now, turkey's down 17%. Dinner rolls are down 22%. So we have some really good numbers there. You see the job numbers at an incredible 2.5 million American-born citizens now are employed that weren't under Biden. The mortgage rates are now down about $200 on average per month and making a lot of progress on housing, which is about 40% of the average American's spend out of pocket every year.
What about the average American?
Wages are rising at their fastest rate in 60 years over the last 10 months. I mean,
so
these are
help.
Remarkable numbers. But here's the thing. And I think Secretary Bessent said this, too. We're not going to tell the American people how to feel.
Right.
We're not going to be the Biden administration. We say, oh, but actually, you feel good. And they say, no, we're spending more on milk and eggs than we ever have. And our mortgage rates have gone up. This is not what we're doing. Instead, we are putting the fundamentals in place to get back to a thriving growth in the economy. We had a 4.2% GDP number recently. The structure is there. We'll continue to work on it, continue to bring costs down, continue to deregulate. Listen, all of the great policy in the One Big Beautiful Bill, the tax cuts, the deregulation, the shrinking of the government programs, that hasn't even gone into effect yet.
Right.
So all of these positive indicators are even without having that bill going into effect, which is going to be extremely positive for the American people.
Right.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.